It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
If you want. Tight spiral balls? Maybe not.
Go.
Tight spiral balls? Welcome to the Gridiron Show. In association with Sports Travel Tours and with Week 9 in the books, we have no less than three teams who are halfway to perfection. We'll talk about all those teams, plus those who have been falling by the wayside in recent weeks. There's been suspensions, there's been injuries, there's been all sorts of exciting stuff to talk about. So, let's get on with it. This is the Gridiron Show. Yes, Ollie, I now feel like I need to control it, because I listened back to the show for the first time this week, and you leave that going for way too long. No, stop it! Stop it! Oh, no, you really stopped it. It needed to be not quite stopped, but somewhere in the middle. Okay, that'll do. This is the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tour. Sports Travel for sports fans by sports fans. Will Gavin and Ollie Hunter are in the studio as per usual for a Monday evening. We'll be looking over all the Week 9 games. A fantastic Sunday of action plus tonight's Monday night football, even though it's not between two real NFL teams. Ollie Hunter, how are you today, sir?
I'm a little bit better. I've been under the weather the last couple of days.
Really? I don't know how that happened.
Well, I didn't know. I thought it was someone else, but then you reminded me that you cough all over me every single week. Every single show for the last 2 weeks.
I did go through a period of having quite the cold. So if it has come from me, I apologise. But what you now get to do is we sit in this sweatbox for the next hour and 15 minutes, picking apart the weekend's games, and you can spend that time basically pushing your germs back onto me.
Yes, that's how I like to roll.
So, as you said, it was an exciting week 9. Go and do all the usual things in order to interact with the show. Check us out on Twitter at Gridiron on there. We're also on Instagram at UK Gridiron. I don't think we're on Snapchat or anything like that, actually. But we're online at gridiron-magazine.com. And you can send us an email to gridironpod@gmail.com, which one man did exactly that for us this week.
No, is it our first one?
Grant Blomfeld sent through the Ollie's picks for the past 6 weeks.
Wow.
Of Gridiron Predictor Game, so that we could go and update it on the website and make sure that Ollie was up to date. So Grant, being the man who did that, you get to win the signed, he wants it signed by both of us, he's told me this already.
Well, even the Jamal Charles jersey.
No, I don't think he wants that signed. Oh, okay. So it's a Jamal Charles 25 jersey with the Kansas City Chiefs, the AFC Legacy logo, which is a nice logo. It's the Reebok one, but it's a nicer jersey, I think. And the programs from the three Wembley games this season. He wants us to sign them and put a nice message in them.
Oh, wow.
So, Grant, thank you so much for doing that. And amazingly, what that meant was that for the week that you forgot to press submit, there were 14 games that week. It was, I think it was week 6. Thursday night football was Falcons Saints. That was a big upset, as people saw it at the time. Obviously, from what we've seen in the week since then, not so much so. The Falcons have gone 1-3 in their 4 games since, and including that, whereas the Saints are on quite the streak until last night. We'll get to that as well.
Nice tease.
But there were 13 games on the Sunday and Monday, and you got 13 of them right. You'd have won the hat.
Do I still get the hat?
No, you don't get the hat.
What?
The usual terms and conditions if you work for the magazine, friends and family, all that stuff.
I haven't signed anything.
Yeah, well, I don't know how to react to that. The terms and conditions clearly state you're not allowed to win a hat, though.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure
what?
It says in there, Ollie Hunter can't win the hat. But so, thank you very much again for doing that, Grant. We really appreciate it. And if anyone wants to send us some more long form thoughts, then please do so to gridironpod@gmail.com. Ollie, before we get on to the football, and there is a lot to talk about, we've had a couple of big suspensions. There's no interviews on today's show. We're going to go with a straightforward review of the weekend, but we've got a couple of potential blockbusters coming up late in the week. Some feelers are out there. We might have a couple of really big names, so look forward to the Friday show, because that should be a really good one. Ollie, any any non-football thoughts before we get to the football?
Well, no, I was just going to say, often I think when people say, oh, we've got some interviews in the pipeline, that they're lying. But we actually have. So they're really exciting. It might happen. I think it will happen. Something will happen, and it's exciting. Just find out on Friday's show.
Now, we do put out a tweet on Gridiron before the show starts. You're right, they're fantastic. Just to give it a tease, I said it in the intro there are three teams on their way to perfection. They may hold the key to our fantastic interviews. We'll go from there at a later point. We ask on Twitter when we do the show, and we often ask far too late to involve all of your tweets. So we're sorry about that. We need to start putting it out like an hour or so before we start recording. But we put it out just a short while ago, and one of our favourites, Neil Dutton from the Mains and Duts podcast, has got in touch to ask, is a hot dog a sandwich? Now, just to put it on record, he's saying no.
I would say no.
Now, why is a hot dog not a sandwich? It's something sandwiched between two pieces of bread, theoretically.
Yeah, but I think because the bread is connected.
Yeah, but I mean, a loaf of bread is theoretically connected before you've sliced it.
Yeah, but you then could you separate it into the bottom a sandwich.
So, but does it become a sandwich the moment the hot dog bun separates on the bottom?
Yeah. Yeah. If you have a hot dog, but the bun, you know, sometimes you get crap buns and the buns split. That then becomes a hot dog sandwich.
What about a baguette? Where the side of the baguette is still connected, but you've put more traditional sandwich meat in there. So like ham, lettuce, tomato, but there's still an element of connection on the bit. Or the ciabatta or the similar Mediterranean-y bread.
I think that's a baguette.
No, but we're saying, is it a sandwich or not? You can't just say it's a baguette. That's the type of bread.
I think a sandwich has to be part of the...
Has to be sliced bread.
I think it's, well, or roughly sliced. You can rip open the bread with your bare hands.
So what's a panini?
It's a panini. What do you think a panini is?
See, look, we get all the best questions on
One of
Twitter.
My mantras in life, I've got two. India stinks and a sandwich is never complete.
Hold on, what's the first one?
India stinks.
As in the country?
Yeah, it really smells.
Ollie, I'm somewhat taken aback.
It's a beautiful, wonderful, beguiling place, but it does smell.
I've not been yet, so I'm not going to avoid it. Based on your recommendation of stink, I'm not going to. I'm not going to make a decision either way.
Where I went, Delhi really stinks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
What about a Delhi sandwich?
Oh, don't sandwich me off. we had. I went round to yours yesterday.
You did
to watch the games. Lovely, and you made us chili.
I did make a chili.
Now,
particularly unspicy chili, sadly, but that's how my wife likes it.
Yeah, and that's
she
fine.
She has first preference over you.
Her house, her rules. But you put something in the chili I've never had in the chili.
Not kidney beans. Everyone has kidney beans in chili. Chopped tomatoes, they go in every chili. Chili powder, obviously, and the likes, spices,
by the way,
etc.
I saw a Simpsons today I'd never seen before. It's a Mako.
You've got, oh, that's a great one. Yeah. That's a really old one. That's why I was taken aback a little bit.
It was just,
I've also said the phrase taken aback twice in the first 5 minutes of this show.
Get over yourself. But you put sweet corn in your chili. Now, does anyone else out there put sweet corn in their chili con carne? Because I've never had it, but I liked it. I liked the little explosion of, sorry, that was me hitting the microphone, not Will. The explosion of the sweet corn in your mouth and the texture.
I'm all about the texture in food.
It's all about the texture.
All about the texture in food. And again, it's a wife's favourite. So she's a fan, therefore I'm a fan. I want to complain about red cups, and specifically Starbucks red cups. And I specifically don't want to complain about them as such. I more want to complain about the Christian faith.
Yes, I'm all on board for this.
Right, are you following this story on social media?
You're preaching to the choir, my friend.
Are you following this? Are you following this story on social media?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
So every year, Starbucks have a red cup for Christmas. You're familiar with the Starbucks red cup. Normally, it has some kind of Starbucks. If you want to sponsor us, we're saying your name a lot. Feel free. We're very cheap. With all the kind of, it's red with all the Christmas trimmings on it, right? This year, they've gone for just a simple, plain red cup. It's two-tone, it slightly gradually changes, almost like a sunrise, and you can see it on the screen there, very simple. Christians have lost their proverbial shit.
Why?
Apparently, the fact that there's no Christmas iconography on the cups means that Starbucks have rejected Christmas, have rejected Christianity, and turned their back on Jesus. Are they the most stupid people on the internet?
Oh. Other than Vikings fans, I'd say yes.
We'll get to that in a minute as well. The reason is, though, because, see, that's what the normal one looks like. But what? Like, Jesus wasn't literally born under a fern. Funnily enough, it wasn't snowing in the Middle East when Jesus was born. You ridiculous human beings.
Allegedly born.
And, I've got no issue with the Christian faith as a whole, and there are lots of good teachings in there, and, you know, people who follow it in a positive way can have a very positive life. But what's phenomenal about it is the reaction to it. So their reaction to the fact that they've started selling red cups without Christian iconography on, therefore turning their backs on Jesus, is to go into Starbucks, buy coffee, and you know when they ask you for your name and you say, my name's, you know, Dan Fouts or whatever you say your name is.
Well, my name.
Yeah, well, you know, people
but
like
they
to do
never get
fun.
It right.
I don't know why I particularly picked former Chargers, because he's got a great beard and you look a bit like Dan Fouts right now with your great beard.
Where did that come from?
Well, we were on an NFL podcast. I made it about football.
It was good.
So Christians have been going into Starbucks, buying their coffee, and then telling them that their name is Merry Christmas, so that Starbucks write Merry Christmas on their cups. There's a whole thing on Instagram with this hashtag Merry Christmas Starbucks. You can go on and look at it. But the most ridiculous part of all of this is, yeah, the best way to get back at a corporation you're pissed off at is go and spend money in their retail outlets.
That doesn't even pay tax.
You ridiculous, ridiculous people. I don't know. I felt I needed to get that off my chest. I know that it is not relevant to the NFL or anything else we do on this podcast. And normally we just like to talk about nice, fun, light things instead. I needed to get that off my chest. I was angry and bemused, and I was so annoyed that it interrupted my tweeting about Blaine Gabbert's phenomenal performance in San Francisco on Sunday night and caused me to start tweeting about that instead.
Would you, if you said your name was Snowflake, would they draw a snowflake or would they write Snowflake?
I suppose it depends on how amusing the individual barista is. Also, barista's a bit of a wanky name, isn't it?
Whoa, really is.
Sorry if there are any baristas listening. If this is playing in Starbucks right now, I apologise for everything I've said. I don't mean it's Starbucks. Please do come and sponsor us. We need the money! Right, as always, we start the podcast by talking about Monday Night Football, even though there are clearly more important games to talk about. We want to talk about the undefeated teams. In fact, all of the tweets coming in so far, Dave Cheeseman, can Carolina actually win the Super Bowl? Hysteria or not, Beer Bet says they can!
Hysterical! Hysterical!
But it isn't hysterical. They could win the Super Bowl.
They really could.
We'll talk about their game and their... I can't remember who they beat this weekend, Ollie.
The Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, they did.
Yep, that completely destroyed the Green Bay Packers.
Who picked that on the show on Friday? Saturday? Whenever it was? This guy! Jack Walton wanted to know most likely of the three unbeaten teams to go the perfection and go 16-0. And we've also had a tweet in from Rob Fussy asking whether or not Cam is the best quarterback in the league. So everyone wants to talk about the undefeated teams. We will talk about those shortly, but we should start off with the Monday Night Football game. As I think Chicago Bears travel to San Diego. I think that's right. I don't care very much.
It's right.
Thank you. The only real thing to watch out from this game is the fact that the Chargers defense has been such a letdown this year, despite investing so much in, you know, the linebackers, in high picks, and in guys like Ingram, and the offensive line's a mess. Melvin Ingram, they invested a high pick in, and really hasn't worked out. So Rivers is having to throw the ball a lot. He, at this point in the season, is on pace for 5,506 passing yards, which would break Peyton Manning's single-season passing record based on his first 8 games of the season.
Wouldn't that be brilliant?
I mean, actually, just to be fair, Peyton started faster. He was already on sort of 2,900 around this point. He slowed as the season went on, whereas Rivers has been a bit more steady, and obviously the 500 against Green Bay makes a big difference. But that's pretty amazing, considering we're going to talk about Drew Brees later on today and the kind of records that he might be setting. So that's crazy. That's one thing to look out for in this game, I guess. Just to confirm, I think I took the Chargers.
I took the Chargers. No, you took the Bears.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think you took the Bears.
That's disappointing.
What we need is someone to email it.
We've got nothing good to give away left. So here is my look back on Monday Night Football. So as usual, let's blast through our look at Monday night football. And before, just very quickly before we do that, we should mention there was one piece of news, as always, as we roll off the show. And that's that veteran wide receiver Wes Welker has joined the St. Louis Rams till the end of the season. Again, not a huge bit of news. Maybe it'll improve that receiving core, offer Nick Foles some shorter options rather than those deep balls to Kenny Britton, to the other chap there whose name's just gone off the top of my head. It's like owning him in many, many leagues at the beginning of this year, Brian Quick. So yeah, that's a bit of news from there. But let's talk Monday Night Football. Jay Cutler, the renaissance under Adam Gase continues. Zach Lennon made a phenomenal one-handed grab of a 25-yard touchdown pass from a Jay Cutler fastball with 3:19 to go, and the Bears beat San Diego Chargers 22-19 down on the West Coast last night. Cutler, who overcame an interception return for a touchdown and a fumble, threw for 345 yards and calmly led the Bear on the winning 10-play 80-yard drive after the Chargers had taken a 19-14 lead on rookie Josh Lambeau's 22-yard field goal. Miller made the leaping grab with his right hand and scored. Rookie Jeremy Langford in for Matt Forte ran in the two-point conversion, and he was absolutely superb on the night. He played behind Le'Veon Bell for two of his 4 years at college, which is why his numbers don't look huge. But for the 2 years that he was the starter at college, he ran 40 touchdowns, and he looks like a player. Brilliant 31-yard reception. He has played as a wide receiver as well, with Forte due to reach free agency at the end of this year. Langford put in a very strong bid for the Bears' starting job next season. Phillip Rivers, you have to say, despite the fact that he lost this game, managed to rely on a ridiculous cast of players by the end, after Malcolm Floyd, one of the most underrated wide receivers in the league, who is retiring at the end of the season, maybe at the end of this game after today's injury, went out. He's left with Stevie Johnson, Dontrell Inman and Javonte Herndon. Darius Green down, Antonio Gates slogging through an MCL sprain. Used Danny Woodhead a lot in this game, didn't see a huge amount of Melvin Gordon. One of the real shames is it was a big day not only for Langford but also for the wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey. A real shame that there was a great battle going on between him and Jason Verrett, obviously the guy who Ollie said they were going to pick in the first round 2 years ago. He got a groin injury, and it robbed us to the chance of watch what was proving at that point to be an intriguing matchup. Real battle of wills between the receiver and the corner. So all in all, an entertaining Monday night football. Took a little while to get going. I still think that the Bears looking more and more impressive. Adam Gase, he was linked with many, many head coaching jobs. Don't expect that to change going into next year. And the Bears snap a two-game losing streak to move to 3-5. San Diego at 2-7 lost its fifth straight game, and there's now talk from Chargers fans of how high they're going to be picking in the draft. Real shame for them with all their injuries. They look like a good team this year. Maybe next year, San Diego. Chicago, probably next year as well, but you look like you've got some talent there. That was good fun. Let's look forward and back to go back to the team. That's me and Ollie with the rest of the weekend's action. So that was me looking back on Monday Night Football just to confirm that I did take the Chargers in that game. We've just double checked it on the predictor game whilst we left a little pause for me to talk into. And now let's get on to the Sunday night games. And there really is only one place we can start. And that is, Cam Newton throwing three touchdown passes and running in for another score as the Carolina Panthers took a huge step towards the best record in the NFC and a home playoff run as they beat the Green Bay Packers 37-29 on Sunday evening. Newton completed 15 for 30 for 297 yards and ran for another 57 on 9 carries, one of the best games of his 5-year career. And the Panthers have gone to 8-0, extending their regular season win streak to 12 games. Rodgers himself didn't have a bad game, through 396 yards and 4 touchdowns, leading a furious fourth quarter comeback from 23 points down, but couldn't complete it as Thomas Davis intercepted Rodgers on a 4th-and-goal with 1:54 left. Ollie, how are you feeling at this moment? That's the first question.
I'm feeling all right. It was the second quarter, 24 points, was a mauling, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, Aaron Rodgers was completing long passes. James Starks looks pretty good. Eddie Lacy is obviously out with an ankle. Well, left the game with an ankle injury. He hasn't looked anything like the Eddie Lacy of last season. Randall Cobb looked pretty decent. So on offense, it looks kind of okay. Rodgers.
It felt like in the first half, they continued the similar sort of limited play they played last week. And actually, through six quarters, the Packers were being absolutely destroyed from the last two weeks. They came out in the second half and they were a lot more impressive. Rodgers looked looser. They allowed the receivers to make their own plays almost to. There were, again, the things we talked about, working in more crossing routes, working in more interesting play calling. And that made a big difference, handing the ball off to Starks a bit more often. Because let's be honest, Eddie Lacy not looking very good right now. Cam Newton nearly absolutely destroyed you. He had the fourth quarter pick, Demarius Randall picking it off at the Carolina 22 with 3:38 to play, keeping the but they kept you from scoring. And all in all, Cam, I mean, we've talked about it a lot on this show, but if it wasn't for Tom Brady's play this season, and the person who asked, is he the best quarterback in the league? Sadly, no, that's Tom Brady, but he's a very, very close second the way he's playing this year. I mean, Devin Funchess had the 52-yarder and is starting to look like a player. He's improving week on week. But the pass to Jericho Cottrell, Brown, or Corey Brown, as we're calling him now, and the rushing touchdown as well is obviously another part of his game. He looks like a real leader on the field. This was his 29th career game with a touchdown pass and a rushing touchdown in 5 years. Steve Young has the most rushing touchdown games with both a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown in NFL history with 31. Cam Newton will probably break that record this season.
And hasn't he got the most rushing touchdowns for any quarterback?
I believe so.
I think so.
I'm not 100% because I've not got that statistic in front of me.
I think it's something like 47, 48, 49, something around that, which is incredible. And he is looking absolutely outstanding. What he's doing is, and it's a mark of a very, very good quarterback. I don't want to call him great just yet, but what he's doing is making poor receivers look better. And that's what Aaron Rodgers kind of did
has been doing until, well, into, through six quarters, through Denver. Yeah. And this is the problem. They were trying a lot of dink and dunk, trying a lot of short passes. There was a nice completion to Devontae Adams out on the left in the first half that I distinctly remember where he came back on it and completed it. But other than that, they looked scared to go deep. And that's where they're really missing Jordy Nelson. And that's where the concern is going through the rest of this season. Now, somebody else has tweeted into us, and we'll get onto the Vikings in a minute. But Josh Hunter says the Packers are no longer the best team in the NFC North. Hysterical! That is hysterical, considering the Vikings' upcoming schedule, and we'll get onto that in a minute. And I do expect Green Bay to right this ship, but they really have looked bad through, certainly, as I say, six quarters of these two games. If it wasn't for Rodgers' play extension, I mean, he was hit 14 times, he was sacked 5 times, and if he hadn't been the sort of guy who has such great pocket presence, has such great awareness, is so nimble, the sacks could have been 7, even 9 on the night. And
that offensive line has looked absolutely horrendous the last 2-3 weeks. Yeah. I mean, crumpling under, okay, the defenses of Denver, and their pass rush is fantastic, but Carolina don't traditionally have a great pass rush.
Well, but the difference is they do this season, because K1 Short has been absolutely phenomenal in the center alongside Starlo Tulele. Coney Ealy has proven to be really good. We know about their linebackers. Thomas Davis obviously got the pick, but looked good on the day as well. Luke Kuechly actually went out of this game for a period of time, but still, their defense is stout. It's always been stout against the run without necessarily, since Greg Hardy left, all of last season after Greg Hardy was out, they didn't generate a huge amount of pass rush. They have been doing this year. They've been getting pressure up the middle. It's very similar to what they do in New York with the Jets, the way they've not really got a pure edge rusher. And I've been so impressed with the defensive side of the ball as well. And that's without talking about Josh Norman being phenomenal on top of all of that. And Peanut Tillman actually still looking like he can play in the NFL. This Panthers team is properly legit.
And when you've got Kuechly and
I genuinely refuse to talk to you if you call him that.
And Thomas Davis as well. It's just, yeah, they're looking scarily good.
We already talked about the Bengals, so we said we're going to talk about the undefeated teams. Before we get on to what was potentially, there were two games which ranked up as the games of the weekend this weekend, and both of which we actually said last week we were concerned could be utter blowouts. But let's focus on the other undefeated team, and that's the New England Patriots. Just 10 minutes into this game, the score was already lopsided. Julian Edelman and LeGarrette Blount had scored touchdowns, while the Redskins hadn't even run their second play of the game. The Patriots finally won 27-10 on Sunday to remain unbeaten. Brady, fantastic on the day again, 26 of 39 for 299 yards and two touchdowns, including the pass to Edelman on the opening drive. They pulled off the surprise on kick, which was phenomenal, until some guy called Julian Edelman, not that good that guy, fumbled the ball and gave it back to Washington. The fact is that this scoreline flattered Washington, and for the first time this season, it felt like New England took their foot off the gas pedal, because we've seen them pushing on scores constantly. However, the negatives for New England are Dion Lewis, ACL injury, out for the season.
Oh man,
absolutely devastating. He's third in for the Patriots from the in yards from the line of scrimmage with 622. That's just 70 odd short of Gronkowski and just 40 odd short of Julian Edelman. His yards per reception by a running back this season rank in the top three alongside Charles Sims and Danny Woodhead. He has been an absolute monster, and that's even with missing a game and a half thanks to an earlier injury. So that's really genuinely devastating. I'm particularly annoyed because, and this is very personal, but Pete Carline, screw you, because I had a really good trade on the table in a dynasty league which involved Dion Lewis and a couple of other pieces for Antonio Brown. That's never going through now. Gutted.
Maybe he doesn't know.
I think he knows.
Yeah, he'll know. yeah, gutting for Dion Lewis. He's looked absolutely outstanding. LeGarrette Blount bossed it on the ground as well. 129 yards, a touchdown. Brandon Bolden was used instead of Lewis. In the passing game, and I would probably it's strange because he's been on the periphery over the last this whole season, really.
I kind of think Brandon Bolden, because James White wasn't active for this game, he was an inactive scratch, but they signed him with a reasonably high draft pick. You know, anything in the top five rounds is reasonably high, isn't it? So that's a ridiculous statement to make, but they certainly look they certainly look like they'll bring him back into the team now. And as is always the way with the Patriots, the next guy will come up. I'm more concerned about their offensive line. We don't need to talk about the play particularly in this game, but we already are aware of the injuries they've got on there. And then I think it was Vollmer who went down with a injury in the game. I think they might come back for this weekend, but he went down with a head injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out for, but they are continually having to reshuffle that offensive line in New England.
And they're playing a tight end on the offensive line.
I think a right
or left tackle. He's a tight end in college and he's been moved onto the line. That's incredible, and that's the kind of thing that the Patriots do.
But to the person who asked us who's most likely to go 16-0 from the teams, it was Jack who asked that question. My feeling and my leaning is actually towards that none of these teams will go 16-0. The Patriots are probably in the best position to do so. They have a very tough record. They go to New York this next coming weekend. The Giants defense looked much better this past weekend. They've still got to go to the Broncos. They've still got to go to the Jets in a tough divisional game. So they've got losable games without a doubt. Panthers have been in some very tight games. You think about how tight their win over the Seahawks was, how tight their win over the Saints was, how close they were, obviously, in the game against the Colts as well that went to overtime.
Texans was one touchdown game as well.
You can maintain those games. They have to go, for example, to Dallas once Tony Romo's back. They have to go to the resurgent New Orleans. They've still got to go to Atlanta, as well as Atlanta at home, but you'd see that as a win. So for each of these teams, there's a couple of losable games left on their schedule. And I believe similarly for the Bengals. So it's a phenomenal thing when a team goes undefeated in the NFL. It's only happened, I think, two or three times in the regular season. Obviously, the Patriots did it in 2007. The Dolphins did it and went all the way through and won the Super Bowl. So it's very, very unlikely. And then just looking at the Bengals, I mean, in 2 weeks' time, they've got to go to the Cardinals on Sunday Night Football. So, and they've still got to go to the Broncos as well. So
and they host the Steelers in a divisional game. That's always going to be tight.
I could see 3-14-2 teams, basically, I think is what I'm saying. Or 15-1 will win you the conference as it always should. 14-2. But you're going to need to be 14-2 to get a bye, certainly in the AFC, and that's nuts.
And as it is, and given with Green Bay's defeat to the Panthers, it looks like the Panthers will pretty much have home field advantage come the playoffs, given if you look at the remainder of their schedules, at the Titans, Redskins, at the Cowboys, at the Saints, Falcons, at the Giants, at the Falcons, and at home to the Bucks. 14-2 is a realistic kind of goal for them and home field advantage. And if anyone's got to go back to Carolina, you know, you've got to...
It's going to be tough. It's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, you're leaning towards the Panthers automatically.
It's going to be truly tough. Now, there's a few more real key games we want to talk about from last night. There were a couple of absolute barnstormers, plus there were some injuries, some various bits and pieces. We've got to get on back onto our division of disgrace as well, of course, and talk about that. But let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts. The Indianapolis Colts, who just a few days ago we were lambasting as being a terrible, terrible football team. Hysterical! I feel like I'm going to be using that a lot today because they somehow managed to have Andrew Luck put together the best game we've seen him put together all season against the number one defense in the league, a defense that we're talking about in terms of the great defenses, the recent Seahawks, the 85 Bears, you know, the Purple People Eaters, those sorts of phenomenal defenses. And Andrew Luck threw two touchdown passes whilst Adam Vinatieri made a tie-breaking 55-yard field goal with 6:13 to play, giving Indianapolis a surprising 27-24 victory over Denver. The Colts moved to 4-5, ending a three-game losing streak to stay atop of the AFC South by ruining Peyton Manning's return to Indy. We talked about those numbers. Denver moved 7-1. Manning needed 285 yards to break the all-time passing record. He got 281 yards. He needed the win to break the win column. He didn't get the win. He would have loved to have done all of that in Indianapolis. But genuinely, this was a fantastic performance. Luck was absolutely brilliant. 21 of 36, 252 yards. He broke the 17 all tie with a touchdown pass early in the fourth quarter. Snapped that 24 all tie with the drive to help Adam Vinatieri with his field goal. And then he had the late drive, which ended up winning them the game, even though they didn't get a score from it. Just everything about his performance was fantastic. It's a real shame that when they had a third and long from, they had a third, well, third and reasonable with about 3 minutes, just over 2 minutes ago, might have been 2:25. And they didn't complete it, and they would have had to have kicked the field goal. And then Denver would have had, I think, whatever it would have worked out as a minute 20 after the additional snaps to go on and to go and drive the field, see if Peyton Manning could break the record for the wins, get the win on the day, stay undefeated. And then Aqib Talib decides that he wants to do a 1980s WWF style eye rake. He literally, like, he's literally like something out of a silent movie, decides to go and poke another player in the eye and has now been suspended for a game for it. They eat up the penalty. That gives the extra yardage that the Colts need. They get the first down. They can take the knee and they win the game. What are you thinking? Aqib Talib is one of my favourite corners in the league, and that was dreadful behavior.
Well, you know, he's a big fan of the top 14 French rugby competition.
He is, which, he?
Where eye gouging is prevalent and actually is not frowned upon. It's encouraged.
I mean, it's utterly stunning. And actually, we're going to talk about another non-suspension in a game coming up. But this is the third suspension of his career. He missed four games in 2012 with a PED violation. Missed a game for personal conduct in 2010. I'm stunned, actually, he's only missing a single game. When you consider that smoking some weed gives you a 2-4 game ban.
This, he could have ended a guy's career.
And I know that seems extreme, and I was going to say something similar, but that really is a genuine possibility.
Yeah, it really is.
And oh, just so stupid, just so absolutely stupid.
Can I just say before we move on, there is one person that picked this game to be a Colts win.
Oh yeah, there was, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
This guy. So is Rob Chudzinski the real deal? When we mocked them last week for just getting rid of an offensive coordinator, when clearly there were so many more issues, he seemed to let the receivers, he seemed to make it so the receivers actually got open against the star-studded secondary. Their dominant defense looked there was inspiring comparisons to the Ravens, the Bears, all these great teams, made them look absolutely normal, absolutely average. And genuinely, that their game plan was brilliant and Luck was brilliant on the night. I don't know what he did, but Rob Chudzinski, well done, sir.
Well
salute
done
to you.
Yes.
Salute to you.
Was that almost an apology from Will Gavin?
They're almost.
Do you need one to give me one for Incredelman and his
fumble this week?
No. Another touchdown.
When he lost the ball, they could have been three scores up.
Everyone drops a ball, but he scored another touchdown.
Right? Negative for both these teams. They both lost key defenders to injuries after moving to 10th place in the all-time sack list by taking Luck down in the first half. DeMarcus Ware missed the entire second half with a back injury, waiting on an update from that. The Colts lost safety Mike Adams, who's been brilliant, and rookie defensive end Henry Anderson, both bright spots on a defense that haven't been superb this year. shame to see them go down, and we'll find out more and we'll probably speak about that later in the week.
Colts defense, very good.
Colts
very
defense.
Good. Rush defense was brilliant, stuffing Anderson and Hillman again.
Best we've seen them play this year, without a doubt. Now, there are two other games we need to talk about. I'm thinking, let's save Sunday Night Football, because I want to kind of talk Sunday Night Football and relate it to the Division of Disgrace. So let's talk about, first of all, this game. Adrian Peterson rushed for 125 yards on 29 carries, more yards than Todd Gurley, as the Minnesota Vikings beat the St. Louis Rams in overtime, 21 points to 18. Predictably grinded out game between two similarly constructed teams. The Vikings moved to 6-2, ending Todd Gurley's streak of games with 125-plus rushing yards at four. He gained 89 yards and a touchdown. Hardly a bad performance. The Rams moved to 4-4. Despite receiving the overtime kickoff, they went to 3-out. The big talking point, of course, from this game, other than the victory, and if you go anywhere on the NFL website right now, you're seeing a video of a very, very angry head coach in Zimmer over the challenge on quarterback Teddy Bridgewater from LaMarcus Joyner, the cornerback from the St. Louis Rams. Now, we already know that Joyner will not be being suspended. It's likely he's going to receive a large fine for his part in that challenge. Bridgewater suffered a concussion, and from what we're understanding, he should be good to go for Sunday. He's gone through the protocols, despite the fact he was clearly out cold on the day. He supposedly, after the game, was fine and will be playing this weekend.
Which is great to hear.
That is fantastic to hear. And no one wants to see a player go down injured, and no one wants to see a challenge which was reckless. There's no doubting that. But I have a real issue with the reaction of Vikings fans.
Needs. And there's more. Every day during the Cheltenham Festival, Betway are giving you the chance to win £50,000 in the free-to-play or to win game. Head to betway.com to play now. Up next, more horses. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, horse, horse. Full terms apply. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org.
And fans across the league in general. And there's a very easy storyline for the media with this game. Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints for Bountygate. Of course, one of the teams targeted in Bountygate was the Vikings with Favre under center. And that's probably that's where the recordings had come out of, you know, take off the head and the body will die and all of that stuff that we heard from 3 years ago. All of that's fine. But it's a real problem when people see a slow-mo of something and decide that there's intent there. You watch that challenge at full speed, and LaMarcus Joyner is already falling forwards when Bridgewater slides. It's reckless, because his arm is up, and you've got to know that in any challenge with a quarterback, you have to be protecting them almost more than you're protecting yourself. Mm. Otherwise, you're talking flags, you're talking suspensions, you're talking fines. Everyone does know that, but I have no belief that LaMarcus Joyner knew Bridgewater was giving himself up before he'd started to go to ground, that he led with his elbow, as people are suggesting, that he had intent of injuring him, and reckless, fine. Fine him, absolutely fine. But fans and Zimmer are livid that he's not getting a suspension. They're talking about him getting kicked out of the league. They're talking about
what?
They're talking about him as if he attempted to go out there and end Bridgewater's career. And it turns out afterwards, and it's something none of us knew at the time, but that the Joyners and the Bridgewaters are lifelong friends. Their parents are good friends. They've known each other since they were young. Joyner clearly came out afterwards and was gutted about what had happened. And we're all angry and disappointed when a player gets injured. And I understand when it's your player, particularly your quarterback, you feel defensive. But really, let's be realistic. It's a physical game. It was an unfortunate incident. But to accuse somebody of specifically going out to injure a player is disgusting.
And these are tip-top athletes going at such high pace, going at a pace that
I couldn't run if I trained for the next 6 months. I probably couldn't run at the pace that LaMarcus Joyner can do a 40-yard dash at, even close. I wouldn't
exactly
get within 2 seconds of him.
And that's the whole thing. So when it's a game of margins, and okay, it does look pretty bad, but there clearly is no intent. And for people to try and get on the back of this guy and say you should be kicked out of the league, that's ridiculous. You need to have a word with yourself.
We're going to get some real stick for this, and I've already been getting some stick for this online. So, you know, we have our position. We both stand by it. I'm glad you're kind of on my side with this one. So
this is the podcast situation position. That's where we are.
Fantastic. Enjoyed that. Thank you.
The podcast party line.
But yeah, LaMarcus Joyner will be fined, won't be suspended, and I'm sure that's going to make Vikings fans incredibly angry. Just a quick mention of the defensive side. Obviously, the Rams defense continue to look impressive. Linval Joseph for the Vikings. We've talked about their linebackers. We've talked about their great draft. But Linval Joseph in at nose tackle, he had three tackles for a loss, four solo tackles, and half a sack over the past... containing Gurley to under 100 yards. He was absolutely superb. A big reason that Gurley couldn't get that going. And the Vikings have a very, very genuine defense. I'm just concerned that, as I've probably banged this drum a bit too much over the last month, that they've got the Packers at home, at the Falcons, the Seahawks, at the Cardinals in four of their next five games. That's really tough. Mm. And another team that they're going to play weekend.
Very quickly, kick watch. Greg Zuerlein, 61-yard field goal.
Wow!
There's only been six in the history of the NFL.
It's only like 3 yards short, 2 yards short of the record.
Short of Matt Prater's record in 2013 of 64 yards for Denver at Mile High. Only six field goals longer than 61 yards or longer than 60 yards in NFL history.
Kick watch! We actually got a new drop this week because it's not the Ollie Schmoozes one.
To the bang.
But actually, we got a brand new one because a listener got in touch with us, Adam Farkason, who's been on the show before, in fact, and told us about something that he particularly enjoyed from the podcast from a week ago. And it was this moment when Ollie Hunter was discussing Manning's improved performance.
Tight spiral balls.
So any time that we need to discuss the quality performance of a deep ball thrower, we can just remind us that Ollie Hunter loves...
Tight spiral balls. Tight spiral balls. I really do.
So it's fine. Childish. Yeah, disgrace talk in a moment, but let's talk about the one other game that was just stunning from Sunday night. Wow, brilliant slate of 6 o'clock games. And that was the Oakland Raiders going to Pittsburgh and almost getting the upset that some of us were desperately predicting. They came out 35-38 losers to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, the big story on the Pittsburgh side of the ball was the fact that Ben Roethlisberger has a mid-foot sprain, will miss the next 2 weeks, to be fair. They're playing the Browns next week, and then they have a bye week. It's practically like not even missing a play.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? I thought it was worse than that. That's the first time that I've heard that he's had a mid-foot sprain. I don't know what that means. But if the way that it was Alden Smith that fell on him, the ankle rolled, and you thought, oh, no. And he was carried off by a couple of his linemen, helped off by a couple of his linemen, and you just thought... Oh, no. Not again.
Yeah, the Steelers have obviously had such issues with injury this season, but they've got the Browns at home next week. If they can put together a win against them with a backup quarterback, and Landry Jones had another great touchdown pass in this game, they'll move to 6-4 bye week. He'll be back in time for the trip to the Seahawks. They're very much still in that AFC wild card race. Chris Boswell hit the 18-yard field goal with 2 seconds left to lift the Pittsburgh Steelers to that win. Landry Jones found Antonio Brown for an impressive 57-yard touchdown reception on the final drive, which then set up Boswell's winning kick. Brown finished with a ridiculous 17 catches for 284 yards. He rushed for another 22 from scrimmage. So he went over 300 yards for the day in total.
Wow.
His 17 catches ties a record. Only him and Terrell Owens have had 17 receptions and 280-yard receiving games in a single game. And he and D'Angelo Williams, also very impressive on the day, combined for 531 yards, the most ever by two players. The fact is that the Steelers showed up this Raiders secondary for being exactly what it was, not that great.
I mean, over 600 yards is incredible.
It is the worst element of what is a much improving team. But Derek Carr threw 301 yards with 4 touchdowns, plus the interception, found Crabtree with a 38-yard tie to score the game with just 1:15 left. Look, this offense, we keep saying it, is really legitimate. And actually, I've been banging the Blake Bortles drum a lot recently, but Derek Carr, with his performances in the last 2 or 3 weeks, has been really impressive. And him and Bortles, let's say, are setting themselves apart. Probably Carr above Bortles, but you know he's my man crush. He's my Jags man crush.
Okay. You're trading away Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
You're not keeping Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, well, why not?
But you're allowed.
The guy's a hero.
But you've got a choice. of Bridgewater, Bortles, or Carr? Who you having for San Francisco 49ers?
Can I have the whole Raiders offense?
No.
Latimer and Amari Cooper, no, and Crabtree comes back.
Shut up.
And can I have the whole Jags offense with those great receivers?
Oh, for goodness sake, you're not playing ball. You're a terrible human being.
Because situation dictates a lot of it. It's difficult to say because obviously he has got a hell of a... The line is much improved. They've both got great weapons. I'm torn between Bortles and Carr. I'd probably lean slightly towards Carr now.
Whoa. Don't tell Blake anyone.
He's already out on the West Coast. He's our buddy.
It's not far to move.
He probably doesn't have to move.
He won't even have to move.
Yeah, come on, it's easy. But yeah, great game. Well worth watching. If you've got Game Pass, go back and specifically watch that one.
Two great uniforms as well.
Hashtag...
Kickwatch.
No, Kitwatch. Ollie, we have a choice here. We have six more games to talk about. We've also got a preview Thursday night briefly in that horrible colour rush situation. Kid Watch! But would you rather rattle off the games we want to talk about in a bit less detail and then get on to our disgrace discussion, or should we go disgrace then rattle?
Let's rattle then disgrace.
Fine. Starting off with the Miami Dolphins travelling to Buffalo Bills, Sammy Watkins had a career best 168 receiving yards and a touchdown, whilst rookie running back Carlos Williams scored twice in leading the Buffalo Bills to a 33-17 win over the Dolphins. Just first of all, before we say anything else, for the sake of Simon Clancy, go back and watch the Watkins touchdown. Ndamukong Suh is being held incredibly badly on that and probably would have got to the quarterback and it probably wouldn't have been a touchdown. There we go, Simon. I've got it out of the way. Holding is such a messy thing to call in this league. And actually, I thought until Sunday night football, which we'll get on to, I think we've seen less flags for the last 2 weeks from the officials. But that was one we probably needed to see.
Yeah.
And Clancy was pretty livid. The Bills now 5-4 off their bye week. Jerry Hughes had two sacks, had a fantastic game, including a forced fumble, which he recovered to set up Watkins' score. LeSean McCoy had a season best 112 rushing yards and a touchdown.
I loved his touchdown. And how quick was he in that?
Whoa! That's the burst that we haven't seen from LeSean McCoy probably in a season and a half.
Love that.
Miami, after they came off their bye, had the Dan Campbell change, regressed back to 3-5, coming off that 37-6 loss to New England. Basically, Dan Campbell can coach them to wins over terrible teams, but not wins over good teams. They're now 0-4 against AFC East rivals, and that brief flirtation with possibly being a wild card contender is probably gone now.
Yeah. Pack up and go and watch some other sports team, Miami fans, because it's not going to happen.
Well, the NBA season has started again, so the heat are going.
Who cares?
That's one thing. It should be said that Sammy Watkins, who has never really, to me, shown the pedigree for giving up a couple of first round picks for him to move up and get him, which is what the Bills did, absolutely blew away Brent Grimes in coverage, particularly on the touchdown. He looked so explosive. It's definitely the best performance we've seen from him since coming into the league. And I loved watching him play.
And you know what they've done as well, the Dolphins?
Go on.
That's two safeties the same way in consecutive games. So
a bad snap.
The first game against the Patriots, Tannehill wasn't even looking, and he managed to recover it in the end zone. The one yesterday flew over Tannehill's head. It was ridiculous. They're not concentrating. They need to pull their finger out. Another good thing for the Dolphins, Britain's Jay Ajayi.
Are we calling him that? London's Jay Ajayi.
Yeah, so well done, Jay. Welcome to the NFL, my friend.
In my dynasty league, I have Jay Ajayi coming off the IR and Dion Lewis dropping down to the IR. Oh, it's almost like it's not an upgrade. Moving on to events elsewhere in Florida. Does that work?
Yes.
It doesn't, because it was in Buffalo, but we talked about Miami, and so it kind of works. Eli Manning threw for 213 yards, having a very up-and-down day, two touchdowns, but two terrible picks, helping the first-placed NFC East New York Giants rebound from last week's debacle in New Orleans with a 32-18 victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Josh Brown, phenomenal on the day, booted four field goals for the Giants, now 5-4, including fourth-quarter kicks of 53 and 44 yards. Manning threw the touchdown passes to Ruben Randall and Shane Vereen. Big things to note from this game. Jason Pierre-Paul came back, played I think 41 snaps on the defence, had a couple of tackles. Didn't do a huge amount, but got a bit of pressure up the middle.
Why was he playing in a hockey glove?
Do you want me to show you his hand again?
No, don't. I don't want it.
So he was basically playing in a giant oven mitt.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a glove specially designed for his hand yet, and he's not quite ready. But he's clearly ready for contact on it.
Is his hand, I've blocked it out of my memory, is his hand a bit like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle hand?
No, he's got like half of his index finger is missing, or most of his index finger and half of his thumb. So he's kind of like somebody doing an A-OK sign, but not intentionally.
You know that means something totally different in Brazil.
What does it mean in Brazil? Yeah, go on, fade the mic down. Do you kiss your mother with that mouth? You're a disgrace. Utter disgrace. Most impressive thing I saw from this game, and I watched quite a bit of this game, actually. It was quite an enjoyable one, weirdly, is James...
Whoa!
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Hysterical.
Hold on.
Let's get hysterical. Hysterical. I want to get hysterical.
Let's get into hysteria, as Ollie then goes, I can't keep laughing at you. Famous Jameis. I thought he was excellent today, obviously had the loss, but showing week by week progress. We talked about coming into the league, how he had far too many interceptions in college. It looked like that was going to be a problem weeks 1 through 4. He hasn't thrown an interception since week 4. If they got their running game going, Tampa Bay probably would have won this game. With the turnovers for New York and the fact that Tampa Bay managed to turn the ball over 3 times, I think all from fumbles from running backs. Otherwise, they would have been right in it, and they were unfortunate not to be based on his performance. Mike Evans had a great game.
He dropped a lot of balls, though.
He did drop a few passes, but he still finished with 152 yards off 8 grabs. And if it wasn't for untimely drops and fumbles from his running backs, Winston would probably be on a winning team today. He has looked much, much better, and I'm pleased that he seems to be getting it.
A little bit of kit watch. The worst home uniforms going up against the best away uniforms.
Ooh.
Yes, I'm going to say that. The Giants in their grey pants, I love that look.
That's a stunning upset. Worst home uniform is not a surprise. Those are digital clock numbers that look like from a Casio watch in the 1980s.
Yeah,
they're all terrible.
Terrible.
Right. We had to talk about it sometime. We'll talk about it now. As Blaine Gabbert threw a pair of second quarter touchdown passes to Garrett Sellett, and the San Francisco 49ers held on to beat the Atlanta Falcons 17-16 on Sunday night. Sweaty ears. I just need to take my headphones off for a minute. The 49ers 3-6 head into a bye on a winning note. Wow. Wow! We're still going to finish picking in the top 10, but Blaine Gabbert had a genuinely good game. He had one pick in the game, which I didn't think was his fault. He didn't take a sack behind an offensive line that's faced such heavy scrutiny this year.
That's because they like Blaine Gabbert.
And in fact, what was phenomenal, and there wasn't a big crowd at Levi's, it has to be said, it wasn't, I mean, I've heard half full. It was like three quarters full, but it definitely wasn't capacity. Colin Kaepernick had to come in for a couple of plays in the middle of the game because Gabbert was going through concussion protocol after taking a couple of big hits. He got the ball away on both of them, but he went through the concussion protocol. And they didn't boo Kaepernick or anything like that. There was, you know, a muted response to Kaepernick coming into the game. But when Gabbert came back into the game, it was like the returning hero. It was like you're a Patriots fan and Tom Brady has just bounced back from an unlikely injury. It was ridiculous.
Do you feel sorry for Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, I do. I do a little bit. I all the talent in the world wasted. It's just a shame.
I'd have him as a backup at Green Bay.
So Gabbert did throw an interception midway through the fourth quarter to give Atlanta now 6-3, another chance with 7:14 to go. After completion, Ryan hit 6 straight throws, but eventually missed Julio Jones in the end zone. Atlanta with one of the worst coaching decisions I've maybe ever seen.
What was that?
This is one of those classic situations. Dan Quinn said he wanted to trust his defense. So they're fourth and goal on the 2-yard line. 4 points down. They kicked a field goal.
Okay.
So the 49ers get the ball back with 3:30 left and a point difference. Blaine Gabbert runs a designed bootleg run, which apparently is something they practiced all week in practice this week. Well done for that one, boys.
He's quite nippy, isn't he?
Yeah, he can move when he needs to. And they picked up the first down they needed. They had a couple more completions and they finished the game off. The Falcons, if they'd gone for it on 4th and 2 and not completed, the worst situation they'd be in is putting Blaine Gabbert, this is Blaine effing Gabbert, On his own 2 yard line.
That's when you trust your defense.
Yeah. If you trust your defense, trust them to get a turnover with 3.5 minutes left or to get the ball back and put you in a good field position and go down and drive for the touchdown. It was bizarre. I like Dan Quinn, but Dan Quinn, as a rookie head coach, you made a big mistake.
You know why? His kicker in fantasy is Matt Bryant.
he needed those points.
He needed the points.
It was a short field goal, but he needed the 3 points.
Yeah.
He was up against Joe Philbin.
Now, is Blaine Gabbert going to be... You're a terrible man. Is Blaine Gabbert going to be your next San Francisco 49ers jersey? Number two.
Good one, buddy. I've actually just bought a new 49ers jersey. I bought the new, the black and red, because I wanted one.
Jarryd Hayne!
No.
I think it was BS.
I think that was BS. No, not a Jarryd Hayne jersey. I bought myself, and this is ridiculous because he's never even played in that uniform, but I bought myself a Justin Smith in the black and red because they started making them because he hadn't retired yet when they made them. And so they were selling them off cheap and he was my favourite player. And so I've always wanted a Justin Smith jersey and now I own one.
I really don't know where to go with any of that. That's like me getting a Jermichael Finley jersey.
Why wouldn't you get a Jermichael Finley jersey?
But in the new throwback.
He's a hero.
He is a hero. We miss you, Jermichael.
Brilliant. Right, let's...
We really do miss Jermichael.
So let's get on and talk about the division of disgrace, because we talked on the Thursday / Friday show, / Saturday show, as it was this week.
Slash.
I don't know what's going on. I think because I haven't got any water and my mouth's starting to fill up with just phlegm.
Oh, right, Russell Hargreaves.
Yeah. That reference means nothing to nobody. We were talking about, it's got to be the AFC South. Obviously, there's likely to be a team with a losing record win that division. And then we discussed, well, the NFC East, though. We keep getting their games on primetime. These illusions of grandeur, where they turn out to be terrible one-sided games. I'm sick of it. Well, I think the NFC East on Sunday night may have saved themselves from being the division of disgrace. Sam Bradford threw a 41-yard touchdown pass to Jordan Matthews in overtime as the Eagles sent the Cowboys to their longest losing streak in 26 years with a 33-27 victory in overtime on late night football. Matthews broke away from Byron Jones, very impressive on the night, and ran past JJ Wilcox on the first possession of overtime to hand the Cowboys their sixth straight loss. Jordan Hicks had a 67-yard interception return for a touchdown for the Eagles, now 4-4. The Cowboys have lost every game without Tony Romo, who will miss at least one more with his broken collarbone. He is now throwing, but he's not allowed to return from the designated PUP, IR, whatever it's called, return list, until after the next game. Jordan Matthews had a coming-out game. 9 catches, 133 yards. DeMarco Murray, 161 yards on the ground. The Cowboys' defense, not impressive. After they have been previously this year, Des Bryant had his first touchdown of the season. This was back and forth. This was exciting football. This is everything primetime should be. I loved this game.
It was a great game, wasn't it?
It was. We could spend like 45 minutes just talking about the plays in this game and what was happening. Matt Castle, 299 yards, 3 touchdowns and an interception. Cole Beasley. Who thought Cole Beasley was almost the man to hand Cowboys their first win in 6? It was a brilliant day. McFadden was excellent on the ground as well. And I particularly wanted to mention those two rookies that I've mentioned already. Rookie outside linebacker Jordan Hicks, who leads the Eagles with 49 tackles. He and Darrell Revis are tied for the lead with 3 fumbles recovered this season, has had to be put on IR with a pectoral injury suffered at the end of that game. He has been absolutely brilliant this year. A real high point for the defense on that side of the ball. And once they've got him fit and Kiko Alonso firing on full power, that could be a really impressive linebacking core. On the other side, Byron Jones for the Cowboys. First round corner, I think, wherever they picked, 26, 27. He's been brilliant this year. It's so rare. There's certain positions in NFL where you feel like they need a season to get ready for it. Wide receiver, the last 2 years, we've had a glut of great rookie wide receivers, whereas previously it's always been one of the toughest positions to try. 3 years, let's go back and include Keenan Allen in that as well. We've had a real impressive glut of those, but generally that's a difficult position. And defensive back is the other one. He's come in and he is easily the best defensive back on the offense. He was blitzing. He was doing well in coverage. He was brilliant coming up and stopping the run. It's my first time watching Byron Jones in real depth, and I was so impressed with what he did. So I think the division of disgrace, despite the fact that they overall had some good performances, 2 out of 3 teams playing last night got wins, I think we have to say is now the AFC South.
It's got to be the AFC South. It has to be.
I think the Colts could now win it with a winning record. They're up to 4-5 now. Jags last night, we'll just mention this game reasonably quickly. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ho, 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 this magic.
It wasn't too obvious that I didn't have it ready then, was it?
No.
Good. Threw two touchdown passes while playing with a torn ligament in his left thumb. Chris Ivory ran for two scores, although only 26 yards on the day. Two touchdowns saved you in fantasy, buddy. As they took advantage of late mistakes by the Jags to hang on to a 28-23 win on Sunday. Brandon Marshall's 28-yard touchdown catch after the Jets had recovered a muffed punt in the fourth quarter.
The Jags did everything they could to try and lose this game, didn't they?
We really thought that they could go and give the Jets problems, and they did go and give the Jets problems. And we really like the Jags, as we've stated on many, many occasions. But they silly mistakes really cost them a game that they really could have won after how well their run defence played.
The Jags really could have won this. They really could have done. I'm sorry to backtrack. I couldn't really get a word in Ed.
Sorry, yeah. I love that Cowboys game so much that I couldn't stop talking about it. I'm sorry.
Well, and I want to talk about it. Yeah. The Byron Maxwell double penalties in the final drive.
Oh, dreadful.
I remember messaging you at the time. It seemed like the NFL wanted the Cowboys to win this game.
I mentioned
some terrible officiating there.
Yeah, I mentioned some flags earlier. There were some really, really soft penalties on this game. I actually think there were soft penalties on both teams in this game. But whilst we've seen less flags these last 2 weeks and allow play to flow a bit more, it felt like on prime time, Hockley and his crew decided that they were going to really try and take charge of this game. And one of those Maxwell penalties in particular, there was a pass interference, which is one of the softest passes interferences I think I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely. Michael Irving, who is of course a Cowboys legend, said that wasn't even a penalty at all. So
to the bang.
To the bang.
To the bang.
It's not relevant there at all, is it?
Another thing I liked about
this game. Go on. No, sorry. We should go back and talk about this game more.
Jason Kelsey, the center for the Eagles, said any time that they could, they tried to get a little bit more in on Greg Hardy.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of stick, apparently a lot of mouth. There was a huge amount of focus, and I have to give plenty of love to Chris and Al, as I call them, Michaels and Collinsworth, as they're known to by the general public.
Chris and Al? Your buddies, Chris and Al, who you've never met.
I don't know where that came from. My mates, Chris and Al, they really didn't dance around the issues. They said beforehand, you know, they said all of us were disgusted by the photos that came out this week, but we've got to call a game. I'm sure it will come up in the conversation later, but we're not going to let this broadcast be dominated by Greg Hardy. And I thought that was a really good, forthright way of tackling it, saying up front that they weren't happy that he was playing in the game, but saying, look, we've still got a game of football to call here. Let's do our thing. And Greg Hardy was a bit of a non-factor. He almost stopped. He got the one and only sack for the Cowboys on the night, but he had a poor game overall, and the best play he had of the game was almost stopping Sam Bradford on what was eventually the touchdown pass. Sam Bradford, he had a great game.
Yeah.
He's been terrible this year, and we've been happy to say he's terrible. We've been the first people to jump on the how terrible he's been this season bandwagon. But he had poise, he took his time, he found his receivers, he looked really, really strong passing from the pocket. And it was interesting, they ran a few plays with him where they were running a kind of read option, but instead of him, like typical of Kelly, but instead of him running the ball, he ran the read option, but they'd always have a short pass option on. So if he saw that the pass rusher was had bitten on the run, then he knew he'd have a little bit of time to find that tight end over the top. Mm-hmm. Or if they bit on and they came towards him, he'd hand the ball off and let it go. So it was fascinating to see. And finally, the Chip Kelly offense really doing what it's threatened to do, getting plays going, getting quick offense, making that Cowboys defense look tired, and they were often puffing, trying to get substitutions in and out of the game quickly, snapping the ball with 25 seconds still left on the play clock on a regular basis.
Play clock.
Yeah, I definitely said that. I thought I might be able to glaze over it, but you definitely heard it. Damn it.
And it proves we listen to each other, guys.
The touchdown pass for Matthews, actually, as Chris Laura, a friend of the show, tweeted, was the tiebreaker. Brecker? Tiebreaker, you got the best of me.
You're the AFC South right now.
And the touchdown pass was the tiebreaker for a balanced Eagles offense that had 36 passes for Bradford, 35 rushes for the team. I still think Ryan Matthews is the better of the two running backs between him and Murray, but Murray still had a great game, and yeah, Wonderful game of football to watch.
Wonderful. Good job all round.
Except by me. Except by me talking about the game.
I'm sorry I came back to it.
Final game, and I almost feel bad for putting the Titans and the malarkey into the AFC disgrace after their performance against the Saints. On Sunday night, as Marcus Mariota, for the first time NFL history, a rookie threw for 350 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no interceptions in a single game as they beat the Saints in the Dome 34-28, and they played really bloody well.
This was a really good game as well, wasn't it?
I mean, the Saints' defense are pants. We know that. And whilst our friend Delvin Bro has some great plays, he also has had some boneheaded ones. He's still clearly learning the league. Delaney Walker, I mean, they were fortunate he didn't get picked off, because there was the Delaney Walker touchdown where the safety and the corner clashed into each other.
That was amazing.
The ball went up in the air. Walker caught it and ran it in for a touchdown. So that was a little ridiculous. But overall, Mariota coming off that knee sprain, really impressive. And as we said earlier with Winston, really glad that these guys are figuring the NFL out and look like they could be good quarterbacks going forward. Neither of these look like RG3 style, flash in the pan, not doing what other quarterbacks can do. Because the thing with RG3 was always the rushing threat was what made him so great. And when he had a good running back in, that's when he looked good.
A bit like Colin Kaepernick.
A bit like Colin Kaepernick. There are a lot of gadget plays, a lot of read option, a lot of that sort of stuff. These two are playing proper drop back quarterback roles, and they look really good doing it.
Do you think in the future we'll see more of these types of guys drafted on, given the last two quarterback sort of draft classes rather than those running guys?
The guys I've been, obviously, because we've got Blaine Gabbert starting for us, looking at the quarterbacks at the top of the draft, and we're going to get Simon Clancy on soon to talk about a kind of early draft preview, who teams should be looking at. Guys like Jared Goff out of the Cal Bears, who is a much more strict drop-back passer. I mean, we talked about how much we like Hackenberg, but sadly, particularly in the game this weekend for Penn State, they've had an impressive season, Penn State, and numbers-wise, he doesn't look terrible, but he's making some bad decisions. He's got this huge arm. Do you know who Hackenberg looks like to me now? And I hate saying this as a Penn State fan. He looks like Jay Cutler. Big arm, boneheaded plays, throws a bit of a strop when he makes bad plays. It's a bit of a disappointment, but those are the kind of guys that are going to keep going. Drew Brees missing a game this season actually will prevent him from reclaiming the single season passing record. We talked about Rivers earlier. He's averaging 345.4 yards a game, which is enough to win him the record. Wow. But he obviously missed that one game where McCown came in for him after he got injured. So he'd have to up his average for the last five games by another, last eight games by another 50 yards to do it. So
that's doable, though.
Is it? Yeah, averaging basically 400 yards a game.
It could happen.
It could. It's quite unlikely.
Beer bet?
Beer bet that what? What's the beer bet? Is it that Rivers out-throws Breeze, or is it that Breeze breaks the record?
Breeze breaks the record.
Okay, beer bet. Done. We're starting to keep a chart of these. We've got some people get in touch, so maybe we'll update you on those at some point.
I really liked, by the way, Tennessee Titans, Dorial Green-Beckham.
Oh, he had involved. A great game.
5 catches, 77 yards, 10 targets. So, and he's the most targeted player on the Titans yesterday. He looked really, really good. He's such a freak. He's big like Delaney Walker, but he's quicker than Delaney Walker. I love watching this guy play. So expect more production from him next week. And wow, the Tennessee Titans I'm almost excited about them.
Brilliant. Right. Have we had any other tweets and stuff in that we haven't already covered, Ollie Hunter? I'm just having a look now. Do Antonio Brown's numbers with Big Ben prove that it's the quarterback who makes the wide receiver and not the other way around? Cal asks. It's a symbiotic relationship. That also gave me an opportunity to say symbiotic.
I thought it was symbiotic.
Shut up.
I know, seriously.
You're a disgrace.
How?
I think it's Antonio Brown's a great receiver, whoever he's with, I believe. But speaking of which, Tiki Barber talking about Julio Jones as the best slot receiver. He said, the best slant receiver I've ever seen. Pretty sure there's a number 80 who used to play in San Francisco, the city that you were commentating on this game from, who might have an argument with that.
Do you think he was saying that just to wind him up?
Just to wind Jerry Rice up, because he's in those disgusting McDonald's adverts where he wears a Cowboys uniform and Ditka wears a Green Bay uniform. Ugh. It's the whole thing is like they're willing to support teams that aren't their own if it means they win prizes from McDonald's, basically.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, not happy about it at all. But yeah, it's you're never going to get great wide receiver play out of terrible quarterbacks, obviously, because they're not going to be finding the receivers.
There's the trust issue. There's the whole route tree that both are well on board with. And also, that I think Antonio Brown was up against a pretty bad secondary, as we've already spoken
about.
And
I think the thing is, I mean, he had the big pass off Landry Jones. We said that 54-yarder, which set up the game-winning score. But actually, the difference being that Martavis Bryant had a couple of big games with Jones under centre, and I think that had to do with the fact that Martavis Bryant is brilliant after the catch. I still think Antonio Brown's brilliant after the catch as well. But Brown tends to run those deep routes, stretch the defence, and then Bryant comes for the shorter routes, the hook routes, the slants, that sort of thing. Jones is more likely to find that guy because of the quarterback. So in some ways, yes, the quarterback does make the receiver because they have to be the person that finds them. But a great receiver is a great receiver, whatever team they're on.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. I think that's us done.
Thursday night football?
Thursday night football between the Jets and the Bills is going to be a Bills win.
I will go... Is that the Bills, yeah?
Maybe.
I'm going to go for the home team.
Which is the New York Jets. I am also taking the New York Jets at home against the Buffalo Bills. Preparation is key, my friends. Prepare to fail. To fail to prepare is to prepare to fail, as my mother used to say.
And that's a t-shirt you can get from Will Gavin.
Gridiron-magazine.com. Also check us out on Twitter at Gridiron. The biggest thing about this game is the colour rush uniforms are back. Look, follow us on Twitter. We'll be tweeting about the game. We'll be tweeting throughout the game. Also, as we will be... why do I say tonight on Monday Night Football? By the time you're listening to us, that's been over. Tune in on Thursday night when I will be giving my hackneyed opinions all the way through the night. And is there anything you'd like to add on, Hunter?
No, there is not.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. No, I'm sweaty. This is the hottest the studio has ever been, I think. I'm literally at the point where I've taken my headphones off now because my ears are so sweaty. Thank you very much for listening. As always, keep checking us out online, gridiron-magazine.com. Go and check out our friends, sportstraveltours.com, for all their exciting. If you want to go to see some playoff games this year, if you want to go and watch some games out in America, I can't recommend it anymore.
When do we
go check out their website. We'll talk about that later. And otherwise, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been The Gridiron Show. Love you. Bye. Big interviews later this week.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.